This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for May the 21st, episode 662. Well, good morning, everybody. It's kind of a sad day here in the United States after the twisters that happened in the Midwest, especially in Oklahoma. I did, for those of you that are wondering, I did check in with Jamie yesterday because her in-laws live in Norman, Oklahoma, which is right below the city that got hit the hardest, Moore, Oklahoma. And her in-laws are okay. They apparently went to the shelter and got through everything okay. The tornadoes went just to the north of them. But, you know, people know that I get affected by these things. I hate tornadoes. I think they're one of the worst natural disasters that you can have because they happen so quickly and so randomly. And I've helped with the Red Cross in a couple of tornado situations before. If I could afford the time off of work here at the Horse Radio Network, I would go up and help again because I'm sure they'll be calling up many, many Red Cross workers for this situation as well. It is so sad, the loss of life that happened, both human and animal, in this situation. You know, there was, I'm sure most of you have heard about the farm there in Oklahoma called the Orr Family Farm, where it was a training center for thoroughbreds as well as other types of horses. And they lost 75 plus horses yesterday. They interviewed, I saw one interview with one of the grooms who was in one of the barns when it hit. He was very lucky to be alive. And he was trying to let horses out of the barns, although in this particular situation, we have the conversation all the time about whether it's better to have the horses in or out. In this particular situation, it didn't matter. The tornado was so large and so wide, they would have died either way. So, you know, our thoughts and our prayers are with everybody that is in the Midwest right now. Another day of storms is expected, possibly Texas getting the worst of it today. This is a thing that we deal with every spring, but it doesn't make it any easier. We had a fundraiser a couple years ago, if you remember correctly, for people that were devastated in the Tennessee and the southern tornadoes that went through that were so horrible. And it was, you know, we spoke to probably 10 different people that lost their homes and horses and barns, and it was very difficult. And there's going to be some difficult times ahead for people in the Midwest and here in the United States. So hopefully all of you will pray for them and we'll continue to keep them in your thoughts. Well, I thought I would do something special today. Instead of just playing all music, I thought I would replay a couple of segments that we had done in the past on emergency preparedness for you and for your horses. And thehorse.com had helped us with this. We had a couple of segments that we did, one from Dr. Jones here in Florida, of course, lived through several hurricanes, and then also one with Dr. Rebecca Gimenez, president and primary instructor for the Technical Large Animal Emergency Rescue, and she did a segment with thehorse.com as well. So I thought we would replay those at this time. It's time for all of us to look at our emergency preparations, make sure we have the things that we need in our emergency kits for ourselves and for our horses. Maybe we'll play a song or two here along the way as well. But I just thought, you know, in light of everything that's happened, it's time for a reminder, and we would make this show more about emergency preparation than about playing music today. So let's take a listen first to a conversation that we had with Dr. Jones, June 20th of 2012. And this Dr. Jones is from Florida Equine. She's a regular guest here on Horses in the Morning on the Horse Health Report with Michelle Anderson from thehorse.com. So take a listen to this. This is about preparing for emergencies, not just in Florida, but anywhere you happen to be.
It's so good to have you on the show today.
Thank
We're
going
to talk about Thank disaster
you.
Preparedness here in Florida, because there's hurricanes coming. Take it away.
Oh, Glenn, I'm so hurt.
And you're definitely thinking Florida because you're new down there. But I'm up, you know, in the Northwest, and I am in wildfire country in the desert. And then there's also areas of flooding and tornadoes. I know in Kentucky you had tornadoes, didn't you, when you were in Lexington? Yeah. So, you know, anywhere you live, there's something, you know, to plan for with our horses. And in the June issue, we had some great coverage of things to do to keep your horse safe during a natural disaster and how to plan to get through that. And so Dr. Jones is here to talk to us, give us her perspective as a vet on what we can do in case those disasters come up. So, and Aaron, so you, or Dr. Jones, you've been through hurricanes, I'm guessing, down in Florida also.
Oh, yes, ma'am, we have. We definitely have experienced them. I've been here for about almost 20 years, and I think 2004 rings true to a lot of people here in Florida because we had three of them come straight across Central Florida every 2 weeks. There was one in August, 2 weeks later, Labor Day weekend, 2 weeks later, you know, mid-September. And, we were pretty tired of having boarded up windows and such. So, yeah, we're no strangers to it.
Yeah. So, as a vet, what is the number one thing that you want your clients to know about natural disasters and getting prepared for those?
I guess you hit the key word, prepared. The thing I think that most people don't think about when they purchase horses, and I think is very pertinent that you should have in mind, is any emergency, you should have transportation. So natural disasters here in Florida, they recommend evacuations of certain areas. How do you evacuate if you don't have trailer, access to a trailer? No one, someone who has a trailer, have not checked your trailer lately. It's got weeds growing underneath it and maybe a vine growing through it, flat tires and such. So that's my big thing, is have an evacuation or an emergency traveling plan, because it may not be an evacuation, but God forbid you get a tornado that comes through the Midwest or a tornado comes through here in Florida, because we are heavy with tornadoes as well, and a piece of the tin roof of your barn flies off and gets into the field and your horse cuts its leg and you need to find a way to get somewhere to get that taken care of. Transportation, I think, is key.
Yeah. You know, when I worked for a therapeutic riding center, I did the risk management planning for the program that you have to do for accreditation. And one of the big parts of that not only is having that trailer to get the horses out, but then also having a safe place to take them. So how should horse owners go about finding a place to take their horses in case of a disaster or an evacuation?
Most of the people, they go online. This is the experience I've had here in Florida. And at the time, I was able to secure my Peggy in a concrete block barn, so we didn't have to evacuate. But we had people look online to the overnight stays places in Georgia, and they probably flooded those places. Some had friends up there. Some went with friends who had friends, that kind of thing. But those overnight stay places are primo when it comes to taking your horse to a place. And they're, you know, 6 hours away or 8 hours away, and you're going to have to get that far away sometimes in a hurricane situation.
Mm-hmm. Which is why you need as many spots in your trailer as you have horses, because you may not be able to make multiple trips back and forth.
Exactly, exactly. And the commercial haulers get very busy at that time, so you can't just rely on, oh, I'll just hire a commercial hauler. Also, does your horse load? And that's really frustrating in a desperate situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you get everyone a little anxious anyway, trying to get anxious horses and trailers, that can not be a great situation if they aren't good at jumping in. So getting our horses evacuated, that's really important. But what if we're in a natural disaster and we have to deal with taking care of our horses without being able to get out or get supplies? And I know we should have food for ourselves, but what about for our horses, feed and water? How much should we have on hand?
Well, they always say to have enough for 4 to 5 days here in the hurricane situation. When you're stocking up on water and such. So the same goes with your horse, and you're thinking, well, how am I going to have that? You know, they drink, you know, up to 10 gallons a day, and so you're thinking that times 5 days, that's 50 gallons for one horse. So what a lot of people will do is they'll just start filling up those big 50-gallon drums. And I've seen it in barns and hurricanes. The concrete barn my mare was at, she had like 8 to 10 of them in the aisleways, all full with water. Filled with water, because you know, even if we don't get struck directly by a hurricane or the tornado, the outlying storms can knock out the electricity, which knocks out the electricity to your well or your pump, which a lot of people don't think about when they have a well or pump on their land. So you need to have that backup.
I never thought about those big drums, the big plastic ones, because you can buy those for pretty cheap, actually.
Yeah, that's what they use. That's what they use, and they're very reasonable, very, very reasonable. Yeah. And she just pulled them out of her storage shed that she had and just put them all throughout the aisleway because she, you know, closed down the doors and everything, and so they're readily available if she lost her well, her pump, and she could just dip the water buckets right into it. That's another thing. Those of you that are on automatic waterers, you need to have enough buckets for water as well. So you do need to have those backup water buckets for your automatic waterers that go out.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I hadn't thought of that at all. So, and it's getting those drums before the emergency's coming up. Waiting until the weatherman says there's a storm coming, right?
Right.
So what should we have in our first aid kit to take care of our horses if they do get injured?
Well, your basic bandage material is huge because that's what you're going to run into is a lot of cuts and scrapes and stuff. Bandage material, I would say, would be number one. Then you could have your antibiotic-type medicines for any wounds or cuts that are areas where you can't wrap the horse's leg. Those are definitely something necessary. Thermometers, stethoscope, if you know how to use them. If you don't know how to use them, ask your veterinarian. I've showed numerous people where to listen for a heart and take the temperature, it's a rectal temperature, that kind of thing. The sterile saline wash, you can buy it from your vet. You can get some of those from the feed stores. You can get some of them at Walgreens. There are sterile saline sprays they make. Those things will help clean out wounds that will, you know, that they'll sustain. You can even get diapers if you need to act as stops if you're desperate. Any kind of antibacterial solutions. Find them at the feed stores, antibacterial like povidone, chlorhexidine is one of my favorites for antibacterial. And then prescription medicines for your horse. If your horse is on Pergolide and you're getting low, make sure that you don't wait to the last tablet to order it, because if we have a hurricane, transportation of UPS to your vet or to you or even from your farm vet account is going to be closed down. So you need to make sure that you have those prescription meds that your horse is on nonstop, available, maybe backup for that. If you have some sort of reason to use Bute or on your horse or such, you want to make sure that you have that backup medicine, but talk to your veterinarian about having those medicines available. And then, of course, I always like to have inside or tell clients to put inside their little first aid kit your veterinarian's phone number, just in case your speed dial's not working or your cells are out or something to effect and you can get to a land phone, you get their phone number right there inside the first aid kit. Or you went up to Georgia or you went out of state to move a horse, you've got your veterinarian's phone number there handy in the first aid kit.
So you should definitely be ready to have your vet not be able to make it to your horse right away after.
Because if anything, they're triaging. If it's a really bad storm, which the ones here, it was a tornado, went through Ocala, it took out quite a few thoroughbred farms, big trees went down, a lot of horses got hurt, and they had to triage, they had to pick which horses they were going to see first. So your horse may not be number one, but you're going to have to do something to stop the bleeding or do something to cover up that open, ugly wound or get the debris or dirt out of the wound that the horse has rolled and rubbed into it overnight that you didn't know, that the injury occurred or whatever. So you'll definitely need something to kind of help you out in the meantime, and your vet can give you guidance over the phone while they're trying to get to you.
Yeah,
the roads may be closed. Roads may be closed.
Yeah, apparently, during that storm, those storms apparently in our neighborhood here with the big live oak trees, another disadvantage is they couldn't get back to our road for a week. Power was out, and trees were just down everywhere.
Yeah.
So you have to be ready for not being able to have those experts come help you out. And then in, like Katrina, we saw lots of animals, horses, dogs, cats lost without their people. How can we identify our horses so that we can get them back if there is a severe storm or wildfire and they get out?
That's a really great point, Michelle. That's something that you should do well ahead of storm time, storm weather, is get your horse either microchipped, or you can do freeze branding, which is a little old-fashioned, but some people still do it. The tattooed lip, if you can read it on your thoroughbred, that'd be fantastic. Make sure you have that tattoo number down, documented somewhere in a hard copy, so that you can carry it with you, maybe on your coggins or on other items. But then they also have the new thing out, which is the IID, which is the retinal scan that they're doing. It hasn't picked up a lot of steam, but it's a very good ID remedy. The microchipping is the most common, the most popular, and they have now universal microchipping guns that the USDA and some of the rescue or the animal control groups have or have access to. And it's one gun that reads every single microchip that's made, even European ones. So having your microchip number handy, as I tell my clients, when I administer a microchip into the horse, that microchip number has been serialized to me, Dr. Jones at Florida Equine. I tell them to call the company, set up their own account with their name and number so that when that horse is lost, they can go straight to that number and go straight to the client rather than having to go through me, who might not be able to get to my clinic because I'm either busy or I've got trees down and can't get to my clinic to look at that number that we've got logged in or categorized in our file, and then they finally get to the client's name or number. So being registered through the company is good.
How much will microchipping cost, Dr. Jones?
Oh, it's less than $50. It's very cheap to do.
Okay.
And then to register, some of the companies charge maybe $10 to register, and you can register up to, I don't know, five animals, including your dogs and cats,
okay.
Even eight animals. So it depends on the company that you go with. And the registration is very, very cheap to put your name and number down, and you can put as many pets up to their limit underneath that name and number.
Yeah.
And the other thing people have done here is, and it's very unique, and you might see it in your wildfires because they might think, oh, it's not going to happen in my neighborhood, is they'll take the cattle markers. You can get those at the feed stores, and they'll write their phone number on the side of the horse.
Mm-hmm.
Or they put little tags on a leather, not a nylon, please, a leather halter, because it breaks easier if they get caught with it. Leather halter, they'll put little ID tags, like you have dog tags on your dog's collar that has your name and number attached to it. The only thing is if the halter's off the horse, then there's still no ID.
Yeah, I keep a big cattle chalk in my kit so that I can write on the side of my horses if a storm or a fire did come through and they had to be let go. I figure that's a good way to find them again or help them find me. I've also heard of people using fingernail polish and painting on the hooves the phone number.
Yeah. On the hooves, but not on the hair, because there have been some products people have used on the hair, and the hair has been, you know, they lose their hair in that area. So be careful what you use on the hair. Those cattle markers are the best ones to use. I carry them in the truck for emergency reasons.
Yeah.
Well, then the fingernail polish would do its job, because then you definitely, it's not going to wash off if it starts raining. It's like a freeze brand.
I was thinking that, too.
The other thing, too, though, is you got to remember that non-horse people won't be comfortable picking up a horse's foot. If it's standing in sand, dirt, or debris, or they've got dirt debris
That's
on
true.
That foot, they may not see it.
Yeah. Well, we, on thehorse.com, we have an archived webinar that we did recently on identification. And if you just go to thehorse.com and under videos, webinars, and you can register, and then you can watch the identification webinar that we did. And it covers traditional methods, hot branding, freeze branding, up to this iris scanning, microchipping, all kinds of options for horse owners so that they can find their horses after these kind of things. But let's cross our fingers and horses stay home and safe.
Exactly.
Well,
I've got a first aid kit PDF print off on my website, and anybody can go on there and print it off. It gives them an idea of what they can go to the store and put together.
Hi, Glenn here with Horse Radio Network, and I'm here with Debbie from Equestrian Collections. What are we talking about today, Debbie?
Hi, Glenn. Today we're going to be talking about our Equestrian Collections Facebook page. I hope all of your listeners know that we have a big presence on Facebook. You can find us by just putting Equestrian Collections in your search box. We have a lot of things going on there. We have contests on there. We have announcements of things that are happening in the horse world. If somebody, we find something that we find, think our customers will be interested in, we'll post that. You can interactively speak with us on Facebook. You can interactively speak with each other on Facebook. You can talk about products. You can talk about your horse. You can enter contests. It's a very vital part of our company, and we're on there every day. So we look forward to hearing people talk to us on our Facebook page.
Very good. And I know we post our shows on there. You can actually listen to some of the Horse Radio Network shows on the Equestrian Collections Facebook page as well. And we appreciate that. You can find it by going searching for Equestrian Collections on Facebook. Well, I hope you found that helpful. We'll have another segment here for you shortly that we did here on Horses in the Morning on emergency preparedness for your horses. We'll play, I thought in the meantime, we would play some music for you, though. It is supposed to be Tune Tuesday. You know, when you witness events like what happened in Moore, Oklahoma yesterday in person, when you actually see the area, it's so much different than seeing it on TV. I know when I was in Liberty, Kentucky last year, and which had been destroyed by a tornado, it was the scenes that you're seeing right there in Oklahoma. And when you're driving through it and it's all around you and there are cars on roofs and emergency workers everywhere and the military and police and fire, it is something that really does affect you. And you can't believe that it's happening, and you can't believe that there's that kind of destruction that can happen. And that many of you who have lived through natural disasters know that feeling. There were, so far, it looks like 51 killed, 20 in that 20 kids in the elementary school, which is something that, of course, has to be every parent's nightmare. Many people who who didn't get to shelters, or who didn't have shelters, or just didn't have time to get to one. They did have a bit of a warning on this one. Apparently, about 18 minutes warning. That the tornado was coming. It was on the ground for over 40 minutes, which is unheard of as well. Jennifer and I were watching the coverage yesterday on TV in the afternoon. We were watching it live as it happened. We were having storms all around us, and our emergency radio was going off about every 5 minutes with new severe thunderstorm warnings, and there was thunder all around us and rain. So it added kind of an eerie feeling to watching the whole thing yesterday. All right, we are saying a prayer, as I said earlier, for if you're in this area, if you're listening to this later, or you know somebody who is. We're saying a prayer for everybody that is involved, whether it's human or animal, because that's what we do here. We also talk about the animals, so we're saying a prayer for them as well. As we get more information on emergency preparedness for horses in the area, we'll let you know. Keep an eye on our Facebook page. I know that a call went out yesterday on Facebook that they needed transport or shelter for some horses, and there was a lot of people that responded. So hopefully that was able to get coordinated, and there was a contact person there. And there were a lot of people donating, so we appreciate all the efforts of everybody there as well. Well, there's a couple songs that came to mind today that I wanted to play in light of all the events that have happened, and I'm going to play you a couple songs. Before we get into our next segment, the next segment is with Michelle Anderson of thehorse.com and Dr. Rebecca Gimenez, who's president and primary instructor for the Technical Large Animal Emergency Rescue Unit. So they're going to talk also about what you can do in wild weather safety tips. So we'll do those right after these songs that I thought would be appropriate for today.
She could have passed for a cowboy the way she carried herself, and that 50 pounds of leather put it up on that pony, light as a feather, like she'd done it all her life. And she asked if I was ready, handing me the reins, and we started out walking. Up until that morning, she hadn't been much on talking. Guess it finally come a time, and she said, I've learned more from the back of a horse. first thing most folks ever get to know. You never really know what you're made of till you're right out on your own. Ooh, baby, don't worry, I know you're gonna be just fine. And ooh, now don't be in a hurry, you feel it when you hit your stride. So don't get right, sit deep in the sand. Faster than your guardian angel can fly. I remember what she told me. It's as clear as a bell as it was on that morning. It was kind of like a blessing and a warning. I've carried all this time. I'll pass it on to my daughter. She loads up her car, heads out of the driveway. She'll have had enough of doing things my way. It'll be her turn to fly, and I'll say, I've learned more from the back of a horse than most folks ever get to know. You never really know what you're made of till you're right out on your own. Deep in the saddle, remember to hold on tight and ever ride faster than your guardian angel can fly. And ooh, baby, don't worry, I know you're gonna be just fine. Sit deep in the saddle, remember to hold on tight, and never ride faster than your guardian angel can fly. Don't you ever ride faster than your guardian angel can fly. Cowboy. tears are falling.
Yeah, yeah, crazy weather all over the place. And we have Dr. Rebecca Jimenez with us, and she is our The Horse 911 blogger on thehorse.com. She brings us really great and terrifying information about how your horses can get hurt and injured during natural disasters or human-made disasters. But today we're going to talk a little bit about weather and weather's effect on horses and horse owners. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning. I'm actually down doing my military duty this week in Miami, Florida, so I don't understand what's the problem.
So, Rebecca, can you start out by telling us what you a little bit about yourself, because you're doing military stuff right now, but you're very busy doing lots of different things.
Yes, ma'am. I'm the president of Technical Large Animal Emergency Rescue .org, and for almost 20 years we've been doing teaching to emergency responders, firefighters, veterinarians that get involved with disasters and emergencies, proper tactics, procedures, and techniques to try to help large animals in various distressful situations, everything from getting caught in flooding to overturned in a trailer wreck to entrapped by a wildfire or barn fire. So trying to get that kind of good information out to 911 emergency responders.
So you're the one when there's a horse running down the street that hopefully has trained the sheriff who is running after it. Or not running
Correct.
After it,
and
if you've been trained properly.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully they're not running after it. But, yeah, those are the kinds of things that we try to teach them. Because what a lot of people don't understand, because we're horse people, is that especially in urban areas, many emergency responders do not have a horse background. And everything that they know about horses and cattle is via what they've watched on TV. And as we know, most things on TV are entertainment. They are not educational. And, unfortunately, that contributes to lots of problems.
And you're a PhD. What is your PhD in?
It is in animal physiology.
Okay. So let's start out with the weather. What kind of weather can affect horses and horse owners? You know, right now it's winter.
The way that I usually try to explain these things is that wind, precipitation, heat, and cold. And it really comes down to everybody likes a little bit of wind and maybe a little bit of precipitation once in a while, and we sort of like it when it's warm and we like it when it's cool, but we don't like when things go too high or too low for any of those kinds of things. So tornadoes and hurricanes and flooding and drought are not usually something that most people enjoy, and neither do our horses.
And you know, right now we are worried in parts of the country about cold weather and snowstorms and all the things associated with that. But what kind of things are we worried about during the summer and maybe those spring and fall? And I think you've mentioned them a little bit already.
Yeah, what was really funny is I always tell people that actually horses are very much better prepared to deal with cold than we are, since we are essentially naked, and they are not. And they usually have, if they're well taken care of, they usually have a nice layer of fat. But you're right. I mean, down here in Miami this week, it's 84 degrees, and it gets down to the low of like 79 or 80 at night. So, you know, you bring a horse from up north down here for the racing season, you know, it's got an adjustment period. So adjustment periods are something, since we have such a highly motile society with our horses, for showing, breeding, et cetera, we have to think about what is the effect going to be on the horse when we take them to a new environment. And then, obviously, in situations of extreme weather, how we're going to take care of that animal and better prepare them or protect them from the situation that they're in. That might be as simple as providing shade if it's too hot. It may be providing some insulation from the wind if it's too windy. But then, of course, when you start getting into an extreme weather, people are forced to make very difficult decisions on, here's a hurricane, am I going to evacuate or am I going to try to shelter in place? If you're going to shelter in place, what kind of facilities is the horse in? How high is the wind going to pick up? Is it going to be high enough that my poorly built pole barn is going to fall down on my horses, or is it a very well-built concrete barn with hurricane strapping? Those kinds of decisions are difficult for horse owners to make and probably going to be different in every single part of the country.
Yeah. And now you're mentioning some secondary things like barns falling down. What other issues can weather cause that aren't maybe the storm but are the follow-up to the storm that you have to deal with as a horse owner?
Exactly. Just like in Hurricane Katrina, you know, the wind probably is not what killed a lot of horses. What killed them was the flooding that was afterwards. It may be as simple as, you know, flooding in your pastures may do a couple things. Obviously, lots of erosion, which is going to be a long-term effect, and from the perspective of environmental care of your property, that's something to think about, maybe even limiting your horse's access to wet property. But in some cases, it gets bad enough, particularly in flat areas such as Florida, you may have 3 inches of water. The horses don't have anything to eat, so you have to change your strategy as to what you're going to be feeding your horses. Maybe they're normally on grass, but now there's no access to the grass. Maybe there's, in some cases, like after hurricanes, there's too much salt in the water that floods into your property, and you don't want them to drink that water because it may lead to imbalances in their electrolytes, et cetera. So just as something as simple as lack of access to grazing, and then how you're going to mitigate that with hay or some other foodstuff. Inability to water your animals. Just, you know, in the case of a drought, you may lose. I have, what's funny is in the last week and a half in Georgia, where I normally live, we've gone from being in a serious drought situation over a week and a half to now approaching a flood stage. And up till 2 weeks ago, many of my friends in the area of Georgia that I live in were reporting dry wells. If you are dependent upon a dry well and don't have any other resource for water for your horses, obviously that goes from being something that we just sort of, you know, no big deal, we always have water around, we sort of take it for granted, to, oh my goodness, I've got a serious concern here. And it's not like you can, if you don't have the facilities to deal with that, what are you going to be doing? Hauling 5-gallon buckets of water from your next door neighbor? Are you going to be filling a 50-gallon agricultural tank in the back of your truck? What is your plan? And really, that's what we do a lot in disaster preparedness, is trying to get people to have a plan, to think through, how much water am I going to need, time, 10 gallons per day per horse, how many times do I have to transport water? It's simple math, but it can be pretty scary when you start talking about people that have 6, 8, 10, 12 horses times 10 or 20 gallons a day per water, et cetera. That's just a good example of how frustrating that can be.
Yeah, it's a lot of water. And in our area, our storms during the summer, we have thunderstorms that are followed by wildfires. So that's another threat that we sometimes face when
Absolutely.
Weather rolls in. And really
Absolutely.
Scary, too. Not thinking about that too much this time of year, although you probably would recommend that people start thinking about it now.
Of course. That's what we actually, since you brought that up, FEMA has done some studies over the last 10, 15 years, realizing that the messages that we were putting out to the public in general, and this is for human as well as for animal disasters, they started realizing that most people hear blah, 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 and they think it's the same old, same old. They don't realize that it can happen to you, too. So having ostrich syndrome and saying, well, that'll never happen to me because I live in Kentucky, you know, I'm never affected by hurricanes, it can happen to you. And it's as simple as losing power. What are you going to do for your pump? It's as simple as providing water, the basics of things that your animals need.
And, you know, we get into that. We've done that before, and I heard a story yesterday. We were talking to someone in Rhode Island who, for the last big storm they had, the hurricane that came through, she had poured water and everything, and was all ready for the horses, 3 horses in the barn, and had all the tubs of water ready, and they lost power. This time she thought, well, you know, snowstorms never really hit here real bad, and guess what? They lost power for 3 days, didn't have the water poured, and had to drive over to the next town to get buckets of water and bring them back. So,
yes, sir.
Yes. Yeah.
I always try to use the example of a lady that called us one time off of the horse.com blog that we do. And she said, you know, we have 100 horses in our boarding facility, and we lost power, and that's 1,000 gallons per day. Where do you get 1,000 gallons of water? And what they did was they called the local fire department, which was very gracious about sending out a fire truck, but that's one fire truck. And so the scale, when we start talking, this is not puppies and kittens, when we start talking mm-hmm. about logistics for large animals, it's large.
Significant. Now, you just recently did a blog post about hypothermia in horses, and I wanted to ask you, why is hypothermia a concern, and when is it a concern for our horses?
As I said before, and if you talk to your veterinarian, you'll find out most horses are very capable of dealing with cold, except under the situations of their coat being extremely wet and in a high wind environment and not being able to provide them a sufficient nutrition. Normally, their gut provides a lot of heat from the inside, and most horses in good body condition score of from a 4.5 up to, unfortunately, a 9, have plenty of fat to be able to provide insulation. But when they get trapped in a situation, and of course, unfortunately, in some situations with people, the way they maintain their horses, the horse can't get out of the wind, or the horse is soaking wet and can't get out of the situation it's in. And at some point, it's not able to keep up with its body temperature regulation. Of course, from our perspective, we normally think of that for a horse that gets trapped in the mud or is down for some reason due to sickness, et cetera, and they lose their body temperature because the environment's pulling it out of them faster than they can actually produce it from the inside. So that's when we particularly see that, and we talk about hypothermia being something that you need to consider if an animal ends up in one of those situations. For example, falls in a, goes through surface ice and ends up in your pond and can't get out by itself, or falls down in mud, even in relatively warm temperatures, cold water will pull the body heat out of the horse faster than it can reproduce it itself. So that's something that we always try to get people to remember. You know, yes, it stood up and it ate some hay, but it probably needs to see a veterinarian to be treated in case of hypothermia.
Yeah, I have a friend whose horse fell into her irrigation pond. And fortunately, her barn had heaters in it, and that's a really rare thing in this area, but that helped save the animal that she did
Absolutely.
Have that set up. And she had done that for her comfort, not for the horses. She had set up a grooming area with heaters because she didn't want to be out in the cold, and it probably saved her horse's life.
Absolutely. Getting the water off of the coat is important. Unfortunately, as we know from both human and small animal, and it contributes to large animal as well, one thing you do not want to do is to scrub on the skin with towels, those kind of things. That's our tendency as horse owners. We love our horsey, and we want to go and rub the skin. You don't want to do that for concerns of the core temperature change. But if you've got infrared heaters or if you've got some other way of warming the room, putting IV fluids that have been warmed into the horse, the veterinarian's going to do that. And they may even resort to a warm water enema, which sounds a little strange, but remember how large the rectum of a horse is. And if you can fill that with warm water, obviously it will assist with raising the core temperature of the animal.
So what mistakes do you commonly see horse owners making when it comes to dealing with extreme weather?
Well, I already mentioned the ostrich syndrome, so I won't harp on that one. But the consideration of, let's just take one example. People ask a lot about tornadoes, particularly this time of year. In fact, almost exactly 1 year ago, we had a spate of tornadoes going through the United States. So I'll mention that. We've done a couple blogs on that. Making that hard decision, do you leave them in or do you take them out? And sort of that depends upon your facilities. If you have a facility that has been engineered for higher wind events, i.e. a concrete block with hurricane strapping or heavy-duty strapping, that facility may be more appropriate to leave the animals in. But the average pole barn, the average lower quality or wooden structures probably aren't going to stand up to much more than a very low wind event, and so we normally recommend that you put the animals out. However, if you're putting them out in a half-acre paddock together and they have nowhere to go, then that makes it very difficult to make that decision. If you've got a 200-acre pasture where the animals can make the decision to hide themselves, essentially, they'll be fine. One of the things that we forget all the time is that animals have instincts that help them for millions of years to protect themselves. And one of them is they turn their butt cheeks into the wind. Their butt cheeks are muscular, they're large, and they can absorb what may look like horrific injuries into those butt muscles much better than they can if they were turned the other way around with their heart and their chest exposed. So they sort of take care of themselves, and those kinds of injuries can usually be treated by a veterinarian relatively easily. It's difficult to treat the injuries that occur when a barn collapses in a high wind event. Although, again, it's difficult to say, is that an EF3 tornado headed towards my barn or an EF5? You know, hopefully you're not standing there trying to make that decision. And the other thing I always try to remind people is, as much as we love our horses, your family is more important. It is more important to make sure that you've got a safe place for you and your family to hide or protect yourselves, interior room, well-structured room in a facility, than it is to be concerned about your horses, as sad as they may sound.
I was just going to say, I'm not determining that because I'm hiding in the basement.
Exactly. Exactly. My parents have a root cellar out in Tennessee, and every once in a while they call me in the middle of a high wind event and call me, and I say, I'm not moving to Tennessee.
So is there any one thing that you would recommend that if you do nothing else, that you do this one thing to protect your horses in case of weather?
Buy a NOAA weather radio, one that is battery backup, so that you know what's going on. That is the gift that I give new friends when I meet them and they have horses and, you know, a birthday or Christmas rolls around. That's the thing that I buy for somewhere between $15 and $35, depending on the quality of the radio you want. You can get that, put it in your barn, put one in your house, and it will automatically go off when you are impacted locally. You can also, obviously, get the ones on your smartphones and that kind of stuff. But a NOAA weather radio is the thing that's going to help you when the power goes out, still know what's going on around you. Because we're so busy in our normal lives, we just don't have time to go check the weather today every 15 minutes. This is made to be able to warn you that it's coming.
Okay. And so you do your blog. We have frequent posts on there, lots of great things that you cover. That's at thehorse.com. It's the Horse 911 blog. Rebecca, do you have any other recommendations on places where people can get information on keeping their horses and their family safe?
Absolutely. FEMA has been working really hard on dealing with the pet evacuations. And what we'll do today is we'll post a couple of those links for people to follow up on. And, you know, any Google search for horse disaster techniques, you can find lots of things. But FEMA really has been working really hard. The other one that's done a lot of work is AVMA, the American Veterinary Medical Association. They've been working really hard to get information, good information, into the hands of horse owners, pet owners, because, you know, how many of us have horses? Of course, we also have dogs and cats. So legitimately, we have to think about all of them as, you know, AVMA's thing is this is all one family.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for taking time out this morning to talk to us. I know you're very busy there.
And thank you for serving our country, Dr. Jimenez.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Well, you're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek on this special coverage that we're giving you of what happened, the events that happened in Oklahoma yesterday, and also emergency preparedness for you and your horses to be prepared for whatever natural disaster comes along. We hope you enjoyed the couple of segments that we have provided you today. I'm going to take today out with a couple of songs because it is Tune Tuesday and we want to give you a little bit of that. A couple more songs that I think are appropriate. One from Dan Roberts that I'm dedicating to all the horses and animals that were lost in Oklahoma, whether it's dogs and cats and horses. There's Dan Roberts did one I don't play too often because it's kind of sad, but it's called Horses in Heaven. And we'll play that for you. And also, I did want to remind you that tomorrow we will be playing the Wheel of Trivia, something fun to distract you and take your mind off of things. Tomorrow morning with hundreds of dollars of prizes, the Wheel of Trivia. Give us a call at 905 AM 347-637-3238. And of course, the Wheel of Trivia is brought to you by EquityMFG.com. It's EquityMFG.com, the Flex and Fork, and the Shake and Fork. And we appreciate their support of the Wheel of Trivia every Wednesday and their support of Horses in the Morning. Well, I think I'll take the show out today with a couple of songs here. First up, we'll have Horses in Heaven by Dan Roberts. And then Hoof Prints on My Heart by Marianne Kennedy. And then we'll end the day with Wishing You Wings by Templeton Thompson. again, our best to everybody, all of our listeners, and everybody who knows people who are affected out there in the Midwest. Be safe today. Listen to the warnings. Get in your shelters. Get in your safe rooms. If you hear those warnings go off today, expecting another bad round of storms today. Hopefully you'll all be safe. If you would like to listen to all the past episodes of Horses in the Morning, like the segments we heard this morning, you can find them at horsesinthemorning.com. Have a great day, everybody, and be safe.
Had to bury my best horse last evening. It was the saddest thing I've ever done. We'd rode a lot of hard miles together. He was a big-hearted son of a gun. And in the wake of his final few moments, his eyes seemed to say, "We'll meet again." Then and there, I was faced with a question that I've been wondering since I don't know when. Will there be horses in heaven? A place where all good horses go? Will the studs and the mares be running in pairs up there when he gathers the foal? Dear Lord, I'm sure needing to know. In my sorrow, I turned to the Bible, like my mom and dad taught me to do. And I read in the great revelation about the one who's called faithful and true. It is written that he and his armies on white horses will come back at last. And my heart sang for joy with the answer to a question all cowboys have asked. Will there be horses in heaven? A place where all good horses go? Will the studs and the mares be running in pairs up there when he gathers the foal? Dear Lord, thanks for letting me know. Dear Lord, thanks for letting me know.
Got her back in 63, a gift to us from Grandpa E. A Shetland she was dappled gray, with the flaxen tail and mane. My cousins and my sis and I, we all took our turn to ride till we outgrew that little mare. If there's a heaven, she is there, and she left hoofprints on my heart. Oh.
on my heart. Some were sorrow, some were gray. The ones I've loved along the way. Arabian, a quarter horse. God willing, I'll love many more. So many years have come and gone, but my love for them is just as strong.
You need to be